This is the 2 North Jackson Podcast with news, insights, details, and accomplishments from Alabama's 67 county governments. Welcome to the 2 North Jackson Podcast for May of 2022. We'll focus this first edition of the podcast on broadband expansion in Alabama, our state's national leadership, and the concept of digital county commission meetings. We'll begin with a deep dive into Alabama's robust broadband program. In the 2022 session, the Alabama legislature focused a portion of the state's ARPA money on the delivery of broadband to underserved individuals in Alabama. In addition, the legislature had already established a program to make broadband more accessible in the state. Today we have with us Maureen Neighbors, the division chief of the Digital Expansion Division of EDECA. Maureen, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
We were talking before we started the podcast. The things are already underway and very busy over at EDECA in terms of trying to deliver broadband in areas of our state that are either underserved or not served at all. Specifically, I think you've already received a large influx of letters of interest from companies. Could you tell us a little bit about the current status of Alabama's Broadband Accessibility Fund program?
Sure. The Alabama Broadband Accessibility Fund, we put our first money out the door in 2018, and since then we've put out a little bit more than $40 million. This time around, we made some changes in our program. We increased the grant ceiling to up to $5 million, and we decreased the match amount to as low as 20%. And so with that, we eliminated what we call our challenge period, which is the time that existing internet service providers can say that an area is already served when they look at an application. We've eliminated that process because as a state, we did a broadband availability map. And so now we have moved to what we call our letter of intent. And the deadline for the letter of intent was about a week ago, and we have received 218 letters of intent. So we don't believe those will all become full-blown applications, but we do expect probably at least half of them will. And that will be the largest number of applications we've ever received in our program.
And so you have about $27 million available for the letters of intent that you've received.
Yes, the legislature allocated $20 million for fiscal year 2022, and we had some returned funds from some cost underruns on some previous projects. So we have $27 million we're putting out the door right now, and then in October, we will have available to us an additional $25 million from the FY23 allocation from the legislature.
And for folks like me who don't understand this process all that well, these letters of intent are being submitted by internet service providers primarily, and those applications are seeking funds to help supplement the cost of the expansion of broadband. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a good summary. So what we have found is that in urban areas, the density of the population makes broadband something that's profitable for internet service providers. When we get out into the rural areas and the population's a little bit more spread out, it becomes less and less profitable. So what we determined was we wanted to figure out what was the gap between where they made money and what it costs to actually deploy broadband infrastructure in our rural communities. And we started out with $1.5 million grant. We had good participation, but now obviously with 218 letters of intent, we're seeing that as we move the grant amount up to $5 million, we've gotten considerably more interest. And that's to help encourage ISPs to go into those areas that previously they kind of ignored because they weren't profitable.
And in addition to this program that's operating now, the legislature also allocated, I think, about $85 million in state ARPA funds for a unique program that the state is about ready to kick off as well. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. So for many of you, you're probably familiar with water and sewer projects, and you know that there are the smaller lines that go to the house and the bigger lines that go out to the street, and then the larger lines that go to the treatment facility or vice versa for water projects. And so similar to that, broadband works on a similar type of model in that there are what we call the backhaul, which are the big fiber that carries information kind of like on an interstate level, and that's what would go from community to community. And then there's what we call the middle mile, which takes it kind of from the interstate, let's say, to the town itself or the community itself. And so those get you close to the broadband. And then we have what's called last mile, and that's what actually hooks up the houses and the businesses in your communities. And so this $85 million program is a middle mile project. It's to help make sure that we can do these last mile projects because the bigger infrastructure is in place throughout the state. We're looking for a single project to create a statewide middle mile network so that everybody who has an opportunity to apply for funds for a last mile project has something to tie into so that they actually have service in their community.
And that program is about ready to start with the application phase, right?
Yes, we are now taking applications. The deadline is the end of June, and so we hope to announce the project pretty quickly after that.
And I know what the people at the county level are thinking. This is one project, but it won't be limited to one county, right?
No, this is a statewide network. Our hope is to get a project that is strong enough to get within 10 miles of almost all communities within the state. So that's our objective. We'll see what kind of applications come in, but it is a statewide network is our emphasis.
In addition to the $27 million now that you're working on the Broadband Accessibility Fund and another $25 million in October, plus the $85 million on the Middle Mile Project, I know there are other federal dollars that are coming down to the state as well. So can you talk a little bit about what might be on the horizon for the state?
Sure. So the next big one that we'll probably have access to is the Capital Projects Fund, and that is between $191 and $192 million. We anticipate that program being available toward the end of the year. We are currently working with Treasury to finalize our application to them. The amount's already been set. Now it's just what the program itself will look at. Shortly on its heels will be, you've all heard of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. There's a big 40-some-odd billion-dollar chunk of change that is just for broadband. $100 million of that will be coming to Alabama, and then an additional appropriation will come to us as well. That money is dependent on a formula that is based on a map that doesn't exist yet, and that comes from the Federal Communication Commission. They're working on it now, and we hope to be able to comment on it by the end of the year so that at the beginning of next year, they'll start hopefully identifying how much money each state will get.
That sounds like we need to have another visit with you in a few months as those things firm up. I also know that ADECA is working on the Community Technical Assistance Program and about ready to roll that out to provide help to counties at the local level.
We are so excited about that program. This is a program we applied for an Economic Development Administration grant for $1 million. And with that funding, we plan to provide technical assistance, go to communities, cities, counties, or groups that come in together with a group application to provide the technical assistance necessary to do a community broadband plan. And that plan can include what kind of infrastructure is best for your community, some ballpark numbers about what kind of costs we're talking about. It's not going to be a full-blown engineering design, but it will give you some good information. Identify stakeholders, bring people together, do some local education, talk about adoption plans for your folks that may not know how to get internet once it's available in the community, and many other things that we hope. A big part of it is just education. We'll be doing a series of webinars to kick off this program that will be available to everybody, and then the technical assistance awards will actually be competitive, and we'll start with probably 6 or 7. If it's popular and it's successful, we will do our best to continue the program with other sources of funding so that we can get to as many communities who want broadband assistance as possible.
And the webinars to kick the program off are scheduled near the end of June.
Yes, we're hoping to do a series, at least two or three. One will certainly be kind of a broadband 101, giving everyone basic information so that when someone comes and tells you that they know how you should spend your local money, you'll at least know if it's legitimate technology or not for broadband. And then also give you a resource that if something sounds too good to be true, you can give us a call and we can say, this is what we know about this technology and this is what we don't know. So proceed with caution. So we're looking forward to that. We'll also have programs about other grant opportunities that cities and counties might have access to and how to kind of stack your money so that you can do different things with different sources of funds.
Sounds like you're very busy, and I know that the counties interact with the DECA on a daily, if not weekly, basis, and we're grateful for the relationship and grateful for the help that you provide to counties, and this is a very important issue, and we'll look forward to having you back to visit with us again on a future 2 North Jackson podcast.
Thank you so much.
This year, of course, the Alabama legislature also passed an ACCA priority bill to amend the Constitution to allow counties the authority to financially partner with internet service providers to expand residents' access to broadband. That constitutional amendment that will allow counties to partner with those industry providers will be on the November ballot and is labeled as Amendment 2. We'll begin a process very soon to help counties actively support the adoption of that amendment. Please watch your inbox for that information. And again, that's Amendment 2 on the November ballot. Back on the 2 North Jackson podcast, we're on County Road 53 in Henry County, Alabama, with a chance to visit with our friend Chris Champion, Henry County engineer. And about a month or so ago, we saw each other in Buffalo, New York. It's a long ways from there to here, snowing that day. But we made a journey up there for what was a very special night, I know, for you and your family and for us as your county family, too, as you became president of the National Association of County Engineers.
Yep, it was a big night. It was a lot of fun being up there. I appreciated all the support I got from colleagues around the state. We had a really good delegation of Alabama engineers that made it up there. You and Judge David Money made it as well. That was a special treat to have y'all there. I was very honored that y'all would make the effort to go that far to be a part of that. But it was a special time, and it was, you know, a special time for me to be able to follow a long line of Alabama leaders at the national level.
Well, the National Association of County Engineers is an affiliate of the National Association of Counties.
Correct.
Much like here in Alabama, the County Engineers Association. And, you know, NACO's our partner on the federal level. And I know we look forward to NACO's conference in July, and we'll have the chance to be together there, and you'll have a leadership role at that time. But talk a minute or two, if you will, about, again, a county engineer from Henry County, Alabama, getting involved in this national organization and assuming this leadership position, which is going to put you already as the spokesperson for county transportation in the entire country.
You know, it's a story I've told several times. When I became just a state director, just representing the state of Alabama on the National Board of Directors, I really didn't think it would go much further than that. I was attending a meeting and had dinner one night with the public works director, a county engineer from Los Angeles County, California, the largest county in the country. We had a great time just sitting, talking shop. And it hit me that here I am from Henry County, Alabama, population 17,000, talking shop with the director of public works for Los Angeles County, California. And we had the same problems. It's just a matter of scale. And at that point, that's where I came to a realization that, you know, small counties do have something to offer. We can be involved at the national level and have some input. It's just not all about big counties and what problems are in the bigger parts of the country. So that's what really got me interested in going further in the leadership chain at NACE. And here I am.
Well, we were just talking before we started recording that you'd been on a trip last week that was associated, I think, with NACE. And so tell us a little bit about what your schedule is going to be like this year as president.
It will involve a lot of travel. Last week I was in Dodge City, Kansas, was visiting with our Kansas State affiliate there, had a great time, nice people. Next week I go to Indianapolis to visit with our Indiana affiliate. The week after that, I go to Washington State. Then don't have anything scheduled for a couple of months other than the NACO trip and, of course, being in Orange Beach. And then in the fall, picks back up again, going back to the Midwest. Got a trip to Illinois scheduled in the fall and several in the winter. So the travel schedule just involves going to the state meetings of our local affiliates and trying to, first off, letting them know what's going on in Washington best we can. Executive director will go on these trips with me as well. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. And so we let them know what's going on in Washington. And then also, one of the things I'm going to try to do this year, you know, as we're all coming out of COVID, all associations are trying to re-engage their members, trying to get their people plugged back in to the process. And that's kind of one of the things I'm really interested in doing is over the last 3 years when we haven't been meeting, you see the participation fall off. And now that we're going to be back face to face and we can see our members again, try to get our association back to where it was pre-pandemic and get it back even stronger with member participation.
Well, you mentioned kind of when you started talking about NACE, the kind of the history of involvement for Alabama and this legacy of leadership in NACE. That was really part of what I was struck by when we had the honor of being with you at the national annual conference when you became president in Buffalo, is that you say you're from Alabama, and you know, we all think when we say we're from Alabama, people are looking down to see if we have on shoes. In that organization, we say we're from Alabama, and everybody turns around and looks at you to see what you're going to say. You know, that history of people who have led at the national level.
That's correct. You know, we still have two engineers that are active in their counties that are past presidents, Randy Cole in Shelby County and Richie Byer in Elmore County. And then two other guys before them, Floyd Lawrence from back in the early 2000s and then Blake Livingston from the 1990s. So it may have been earlier than the 90s. I can't remember exactly when he was president, but there is a long legacy. Then you look at others that were involved in just the executive committee, Dennis McCall from Butler County. I think Charles Market from Calhoun County also served on the executive committee. So, you know, we have a very strong legacy of leadership at the national level at NACE, and you're right. You know, when you say you're from Alabama, the other memberships, the other affiliates, they do look and they do listen because you have been involved. And, you know, I just am proud to be a part of that legacy and hope to be able to represent Alabama well over the next year.
You ran through a bunch of names there of folks who, those names may not be familiar to everybody in county government. Some people who moved us from where we used to be to what I really consider kind of the golden age of county engineering in Alabama. If we look over the last 20 years, there's been more money injected into county transportation, I dare say, than any 20 years in the history of the state. And some of those names you mentioned are part of the reason why this association, and by this association, I mean the Association of County Engineers of Alabama, an ACCA affiliate, is held in such high esteem around the country. You were president of the state association in 2012. I don't know if you realize it's been that long, but you've been involved with us in county government for a long time. We both had more hair.
That's
and
right.
Not quite as many lines on our face.
That's
you
right.
Got started down in Houston County in 1993.
I did. I graduated from Auburn in 1990 and then rattled around the construction industry for about 3 years and just needed something a little bit more stable and started as the assistant county engineer for Mr. O'Neill Ham in Houston County.
And there's another one of those names.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean a lot to some of the newbies in county government, but he was one of those guys who said being involved is vitally important.
He was. He was a great mentor and followed him to Dale County and then to where I am now in Henry County. And we started in Henry County in 96. And this was his home county. Abbeville was his home. So he retired in 1999. And I had my license by that time. And so the commission saw fit to give me an opportunity as a county engineer in early 1999. And you know, 23 years later, I'm still here, so I guess we've done a few things right that they've kept us around. So, but that's a little bit of my background and how I got started in this.
Here you are on County Road 53.
At County Road 53 in Abbeville, that's
in,
right.
In Abbeville. You know, from the perspective of those who haven't found themselves able to justify the time that it takes to be involved, whether it's county commissioners who are thinking, well, you know what, I really ought to do, stay home. County administrators or EMA directors, 911 directors, engineers who aren't involved. Could you talk for a minute, obviously from the perspective of someone who is given a year of his time as president, but has given a couple of decades of time to be able to be chosen to be president. Would you talk a little bit about why you think your time has been worth it?
When I look at where I'm at now at the national level, to me, it goes back to the importance of being active in your state affiliate. That's where you get started. Those are the people you're closest to. Those are the ones where you giving of your time makes the biggest impact. You'll see more impact at the state level. And, you know, I can't think of anything that I've enjoyed more in my career than being active in ACEA. First off, you make some of the best friends you'll ever make. And then you're working together toward a common goal. Because when there's 67 county engineers and we all get together, we all find out we've got the same problems and we can solve them all better together than we can beating our own heads against the wall. So to be active and to make a difference at the national level, I think the state level, you have to be involved at the state level and get involved. And there's all kind of opportunities. I look back over just the last 20 years and I think about the joint bid program. And the guys that got that program started, we have a whole new generation of engineers coming up that don't know how hard it used to be to buy equipment at the county level. Yeah. And the political fights that you used to have to go through just to simply buy a backhoe. And now it's as easy as filling out a piece of paper. You send it to the vendor and you send it to the association, and in 3 to 4 months, you have a new piece of equipment on the yard. And to me, that's probably, you know, the best example. And then you look at the insurance funds. I don't remember too far back as to how it was before the insurance funds got started, but I look at it now as to just how much easier it is to pick up the phone. You get somebody on the phone about an accident that you've had, and within a couple of hours, the paperwork's done. Somebody's assigned to it. It moves forward. That's all stuff at the state level that is just such a benefit that, again, we have a generation that doesn't understand what it was like before. And there are other things out there that the next generation can do to improve county government that 20 years from now they'll sit back and say, this is what my generation did to make county government better. And I think those experiences at the state level are what makes Alabama so valuable at the national level. And one of the big things I get out of involvement at the national level is just the networking, getting together with guys talking shop. And last week I was in Kansas. The first time I heard about a federal aid exchange program was from a presenter at a NACE meeting from the state of Kansas. And I talked with those guys about that. And here we are, 4 years ago, now we have a federal aid exchange program that, through Rebuild Alabama, that is doing great things in our state. Yep. So you learn of things other parts of the country that are doing, and hey, that may work for us. So networking is a really big deal, finding out how other people do things, and then telling them how you're doing it. Because, you know, you can contribute as much as you receive.
I always say that there are not a whole lot of new ideas. If we'll look and talk and listen, somebody else has got the same problem we've got. I had no idea that the federal exchange program that we inserted into Rebuild Alabama in 2019 wasn't an original idea until right now. I didn't know we had stolen that from Kansas. But all 67 counties in Alabama benefiting from that every year as they receive $400,000 in state gasoline tax money directly to the county. Well, we know you're going to have a very busy year. We also know you're going to represent us very, very well. We very proud of you, very proud of what you've done at the state level. Next time I'm going to come back, we're going to talk about that motor grader driver training program that was your baby and your brainchild that has helped develop better operators at the county level. But you travel safe. You make sure you're back for the annual convention. And, you know, no matter where you go, remember where County Road 53 is, Chris. Congratulations, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you very much, Sonny. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Be careful. As we continue the 2 North Jackson podcast for May of 2022, we'll take a look at an issue that confronted counties during the regular session of the Alabama legislature, and it was one of those that came almost from left field. Counties were authorized during the height of the COVID crisis to have electronic participation by some of their members, those that might have been quarantining at home, had a family member that was ill. But that window of electronic participation in commission meetings was closed when the emergency orders of Governor Kay Ivey came to a close more than a year ago. And then when the Alabama legislature began its session back in February, pretty quickly they turned their attention to the issue of electronic meetings. And the association's director of affiliate and government relations, Lauren Hodge, who joined the county family back in 2020, almost in the height of the pandemic, but she brought with us when she came here more than a decade of experience as a respected voice on Alabama's Goat Hill. Lauren joins us today, and we kind of got surprised a bit when the session began.
We did, Sonny. This, as you've already mentioned, is an issue that really came out of nowhere. It became one of the buzzwords at the State House, electronic meetings. Several bills were introduced, almost a dozen were introduced, and or different versions of substitutes were floating around the State House, all having varying degrees of requirements when it came to quorums and reasons for members to be able to participate electronically in meetings. Some versions dealt specifically with boards, as in some of our university board of trustees and their meetings. And of course, we know that some obviously dealt with governing bodies. And so we had many different versions floating around, many different versions obviously that we were tracking for the county family. We watched those versions appear on committee agendas. We did our due diligence, and ultimately we were successful in passing a version that was acceptable to the county family.
And that really started with a phone call from the Alabama Press Association. I think that we really expected the Press Association to have significant objections to shifting to electronic meetings, but our phone rang and we found ourselves in the middle of the focus.
We did. Legislative leadership were in agreement to hold the progress of the bills that dealt with the governing bodies participating electronically in their meetings until we could get around the table and reach an agreement with the Press Association. And we were successful in doing that. It took several weeks for us to achieve a compromise that we felt we could support. But yes, the Press Association was very supportive of governing bodies meeting electronically. And we certainly had some issues to work out, but at the end of the day, we all reached a decision and we were comfortable with our compromise. And so that is the bill that we have before us.
And I think it's one of those cases where we laugh about the making of new laws and, you know, the joke about you might want to eat Kaneka sausage, but you don't want to stop and see them make it. This was certainly one of those. The bill was up on the House floor one night late in the session, and there was confusion on the part of the members, confusion on the part of the leadership, and confusion on the part of the House sponsor about whether he was to offer amendments or a substitute. So the bill got carried over, finally passed very close to the end of the session. But again, it's one of those things that if the association had not stayed actively involved and the membership had not engaged, then we might have gotten something different.
Yes, the floor issue that came about is really more of a procedural, issue that happened. And because of that procedural issue on the floor, adopting committee amendments to make the bill on the floor match the bill that was passed through committee, much confusion on the floor to the point that the speaker halted conversation and the bill was carried over. So there were lots of moving parts, but thankfully, because we are there every day watching everything that happens, the law that has been enacted is the one that we were all in agreement with.
And that law becomes effective June 1, but counties cannot immediately begin using electronic participation in county commission meetings. The association staff has prepared a guide to implementing Act 2022-421. And there are a couple of details about the new law that's important for counties to know. First is that it's not mandatory. If counties do wish to allow some of their members to participate electronically, they must adopt a policy and a set of procedures on how that whole process will work at each individual county commission meeting. Do you use a Zoom video type technology? Do you just use conference call? Those kinds of decisions have to be made at the local level. But the important detail of the act, and one of the things that the association was the most adamant about, is that this law only allows electronic participation by members if there is a quorum physically present in the meeting room. And that was one of those things that we advocated very strongly about.
It was. We felt like, you know, our commission members needed to be present. Of course, we do recognize there are times due to illness that that's not possible to be physically present in the room. But we wanted to maintain the integrity that the commissions have, and so we advocated for that strongly. In addition, this guide is going to provide your sample policies, your sample resolution opting into the participation of electronic meetings that you must adopt 45 days prior to your first electronic meeting occurrence. There is also sample language for your minutes to recognize that you did have a commission member participate virtually, as well as a sample request by one of your commissioners to participate electronically that needs to be provided to the commission chair and administrator in advance of the meeting.
And all of these details are included in the guide that was emailed out, but it's now available on the association's website, of course, alabamacounties.org. And obviously, reach out to the staff. Let us help you as you're making a decision about whether or not to opt in to this new law. And you must opt in 45 days before you utilize electronic participation. So a lot to think about, a lot for each county commission to decide. And certainly, we want to help you move through this process and make the decision that works best for your county commission. Lauren, thanks for joining us on our very first Two North Jackson podcast. And thanks so much for what you've done to advocate so effectively for counties.
It's my pleasure, Sonny. Thank you.
And this will conclude our very first edition of the Two North Jackson podcast. Please make sure that you watch your inbox and you tune in for our next podcast on June 30th. Have a great day.